and we derived the Rutherford formula, or actually the square root of the Rutherford formula for electron-electron scattering. And so in principle, we had a fully relativistic expression of which the Rutherford formula is linked. But the question is how to go from the amplitude to the probability, so to the all the quantities that characterize the probabilities. So today I'll describe how to just derive all the formulas of how to find probabilities for scattering processes. So suppose that we have some particles in the initial state that collide. Then something happens and they produce particles that are, for example, detected, and their energies and moment are null. So we have, say, m particles in the initial state and n particles in the final state. And we know how to compute the quantum mechanical probability amplitude of this process. The matrix element of the T operator, which is the S matrix minus the no scattering unit term between the in and out states, is given by the sum of Feynman diagrams with n plus m external legs. And so each of these diagrams will have the delta function that preserves preserves the momentum. So this prime and then some reducible amplitude of m to n process. So it's clear that the probability will be proportional to the square of m. Then the question is how to what exactly are the formulas? And so I will discuss two most important cases, namely the case where there is one particle in the initial state and the case where there are two particles. So when there is one particle, this means that we are studying a decay of some unstable particles. So first we'll discuss the calculation of the decay rate of some unstable particle. So first of all, how do we characterize this decay kinematically? Well, of course, this decay is a random process. So if you have a sample of unstable particles, some will live longer than the others, but there will be some characteristic time scale in which the particles decay. And so this is the only characteristics of this process. So the in a sense, the decay of a particle is characterized by the, say, time by which half of the particles will vanish. So this is a say average lifetime of an unstable particle. How to compute it from the formula for the amplitude? From the amplitude, we compute the probability. So the probability, of course, is inversely proportional to the lifetime. So if the particle has a big probability to decay, it will live shorter, right? So the quantity that we calculate is actually inversely proportional to tau, and is defined as probability divided by the time of observation. So if you have a sample of a large number of particles, observe it for time t, then the number of particles decayed will be equal to gamma times the total number of particles that we have. Sorry, it has a name. It has a name. It's called particle width. Which is kind of an unusual name for such a quantity. The reason it's called like that is many times the unstable particles are so short-lived that this physical setup of a sample that emits radiation and the particle slowly decaying is simply not applicable. So often the unstable particles, they are simply not observed and appear as resonances in collisions of other particles. So what happens is that suppose that we collide say two particles A and B that can produce an unstable particle C. Okay, so and then this particle decays into other stuff. So this particle will not be directly observed, so it will not leave traces in the detector, like in thinking of some collider experiments. So this this will not be visible directly. But what will happen is that if we measure the number of collisions between A and B, say as a function of energy, then there will be some, some curve that is determined by probability of A and B to collide. But it will also have a bump, a resonance, at the energy that's equal to the rest mass of this unstable particle. And the medium width of this curve, so this is just the number of events, so the medium width of this curve is equal to gamma. The physical explanation for that is the uncertainty principle. So the uncertainty principle tells us that you cannot measure the lifetime and the energy simultaneously. So uncertainty in the energy is inversely proportional to the lifetime. So the uncertainty in particles energy then is just 1 over tau, which is gamma. So it appears as a width of the resonance. Yes.
So this gamma here, that is beyond the effect. Even like this case, you have two incoming particles, four outgoing particles, you have the particle one.
as you have measured income. Yes, so the point here is that, okay, so when, so suppose that this process can go also in a direct way, so this can be, these particles can produce their final state in direct collision. So that would give some slowly varying curve with a, well, a relatively small number of events. Then if there is also a possibility to produce a particle then that later decays, greatly enhances the probability of this process. So there is, there appears a resonance, and so near when we tune the collision energy to the mass of this particle, the probability will be very, very big. And the width of this region will be determined by the lifetime of this particle. So that's what the point of the discussion. So then how do we calculate this gamma? Well, we have a definition for it, so it's probability divided by probability in unit time. And probability we can compute by, well, taking this square, this matrix element, and its square will define us the probability. So let's see. Yes. Just the time that along which we observe the system. So in the calculation, it will be strictly infinite because we do our calculations without imposing any, we impose our boundary conditions at plus and minus infinity. So this, when we will do this calculation, it will get some infinities, but well, it's easy to interpret them as in terms of just by dividing over the time of observation. Well, let me just write the formulas and you will see what I mean. Okay, so, right. So this amplitude actually describes a particular channel of the decay. So this particle, the outgoing particles in principle can have different momenta and energies, and the only constraint is that their sum should be equal to the sum of the energies should be equal to the particle's mass if you consider the decay at rest, and the sum of momenta should be zero. So apart from that, there will be some phase space that, describes a particular state of the outgoing decay products. So this means that we are dealing with the decay, with the process in the continuous spectrum. So to write down the probability from the amplitude, we then need to have a measure on the phase space of the outgoing decay products. And that contains some, so one has to be accurate with various factors. So to do this, one should take into account that the completeness condition for one particle states has this energy in the numerator, and this is because the one particle states in field theory are normalized to square root of twice the energy, so we have to divide it in the completeness equation. So the differential probability will be given by what? So we need to, so to get the total probability, we need to integrate over phase space for each outgoing particle. And the volume element of this phase space is just given by this, well, this factor. So for each outgoing particle, we need to introduce this factor of available phase space. And then we just multiply it by the square of the by the way, there's a factor I'm missing here. So we need to multiply it by the quantum mechanical probability amplitude, which is the square of the matrix element. So we take this matrix element. So in the final state, we have n particles. And then we are considering the case where in the initial state we have just one particle. But we also need to divide by the normalization of this particle's wave function, right? So this will be normalized probability of this particle to decay into n particles with given momenta. And so this gives us the volume of the cell in the phase space to which this particle is decay. So is this clear how this formula is obtained? Well, then let's proceed in computing what we get from this formula. Well, when we do this, we have to do some steps that sound a little bit fishy, because you see, when we are writing an equation like that, it actually contains it is of the form infinity divided by infinity. Well, one infinity arises because so if we take the normalization factor of the two particles, so this is equal to what? This is equal to 2 pi cubed. Then this relativistic factor 2 e of p. And then the delta function the wave function is normalized to the delta function. So what we get is delta of 0. And delta of 0, of course, is infinite. But we can understand what this infinity means, because, let's say we have a finite momentum. So then the delta function of p, no, what's denoted by q. This is equal to an integral of exponential I u dot x. And so if we send u to 0, this integral will diverge and will just give the volume of the of the whole space. So in principle, to to do this calculation properly, we should have dealt with the finite wave packets. So instead of considering plane waves, we should have considered particles with localized wave function. This would make formulas enormously more complicated. Or we should put this particle in a box and consider, say, decaying the so quantize the field with periodic boundary conditions. And again, this will be a little bit more complicated. But at the end, if we just do a very simple manipulations, which are a bit formal, by replacing delta functions with the with these volumes that we are assume are infinite, then at the end we'll get the right answer. So in other words, we for this normalization factor, what do we get? We get that it's equal to 2 times m, because we are considering a decay at rest of a particle at rest, times the volume of space of the total volume of space. So in the denominator, we have an infinitely big factor in this formula. In the numerator. No, in the denominator, but it must be canceled by equally infinite factor in the numerator. And that arises from the delta function of energy momentum conservation. So in the numerator, we have, so there is this delta function in the matrix element. But since we take the matrix element squared, the delta function will also be squared. And well, that's can be written as the delta function of this argument. And then if delta function multiplies something, in that something, we can always put the argument to 0. So we get the delta function of 0. Now, this delta function was four-dimensional. So in fact, we can write that the square of the matrix element that we used to compute the probability, it will so it will contain the delta function. Then the other delta function that appears can be replaced by volume times time of observation. So this is the four volume, because this is a four-dimensional delta function, that we'll get a four volume. And then there will be a finite square of the amplitude. So finally, to define the differential width, we just substitute this formula into the equation for the probability. And as you see, the volume factors cancel between numerator and denominator. And we get something proportional to the time of observation. Okay. We want to calculate the probability normalized to probability per unit time, per unit time. So we just divide out by t and we get the width. Finally, for the well-defined quantity, we get for this quantity, which is the differential probability normalized by time, we get that it's equal to the element of phase space there will be the square of the amplitude. And also from the normalization of the wave function, we will get the factor of 2m in the numerator. So this is the final result. And this is just kinematics. It's all dynamical information sits in this matrix element. Yes. This is an operator. I'm sorry to denote different things by the same letter, but time is always denoted by t, and the t matrix is always written by t. So let's put a hat on the t when it is an operator. So this is completely different t's. So here, of course, we have an operator. The last equation. Which one? This one? There's. Okay, so. So what is this defi? Defi is the phase space. So it's the element of the phase space. And it is defined by the, well, just the volume of momentum space for all outgoing particles constrained by energy and momentum conservation. And then we should multiply by the remaining delta function. So this is equal to 2 pi. There is a factor of 2 pi 4 of delta of p minus some over the decay products of their momentum. So incidentally, this phase space is Lorentz invariant, so it's the same in all reference frames. And the way it works is that the energy, so this energy denominator makes the free volume of momentum space relativistically invariant. Yes?
So we're integrating over the three momentum, but there's a delta for the four momentum?
But the delta is for the four momentum. Yes. So it's delta of energy conservation times delta of momentum conservation. So as an example, let's compute the phase space of two particles. Right, so we have some unstable particle that decays, and it emits two particles with, say, identical properties. This need not be identical particles, but we'll assume that they have the same mass. So for instance, I don't know, there's some unstable I don't know what, that decays into electron and positron pair. And so we consider this process in the rest frame of this unstable particle. Therefore, momentum conservation tells us that these particles will fly apart with the momenta that are equal in magnitude and opposite in direction. And then energy conservation tells us that the energy of these particles is well, is equal to the, so the energy of the decay products is well, I'm sorry, this shouldn't be two, right? So this should be the right equation. So the mass is equally distributed, the mass of the initial particle is equally distributed in the energies of the decay products. So then what is the phase space? So originally the phase space was six dimensional, right? So the particles can, well, two particles are characterized by their three momenta, but the momentum conservation okay, reduces it by three. So if we know the momentum of one particle, then the other momentum is determined. And the energy, also energy conservation imposes another condition. So we get just 2 degrees of freedom left. And this is the direction of in which this unstable, I mean, in which the one of these particles flies. So let's see what it does to the phase space. So d phi, okay, so we can immediately eliminate one of the momenta using the delta function, but let's be more accurate with the other, with the energy conservation. Because it is nonlinear in momentum, so we should write it as a delta function. So we could use this to eliminate the integration of the direction of momentum, but we have to take into account that the argument of the delta function is nonlinear, so we should divide by the derivative of the argument at the point where it is zero. So in other words, this will be equal to the element of the solid angle in which this particle lies. So if you consider the decay inside the solid angle d omega, then the element of phase space is proportional to that. Then there will be a factor of 2 pi squared. and twice the energy. And from here, so we need to let's say to divide by the derivative. There's something wrong here. So this factor should be squared. Why is that? Well, the reason is that you see there for each integration we have 1/2 the energy. And originally we had two integrations over two particles momenta, but one of those is removed by the momentum conservation delta function. So anyway, so there is a factor of 2e squared here. And then we should divide by the derivative of this with respect to the moment, with to the absolute value of momentum. And this will be equal to okay, so absolute value of momentum. Will be in the numerator multiplied by the energy. So this is the derivative that comes from the delta function. And then the three volume and momentum space is equal to the dimensionless solid angle times the momentum squared. Right? So at the end, this will be equal to d to omega sixteen pi squared. And then there will be the ratio of absolute value of momentum to the particle's energy. And so this can be written as d to omega divided by 16 pi squared. And then we can use that the momentum, well, is equal to e squared minus p squared. So this will be 1 minus m squared divided by e squared. So that's the, this is the two particle phase space. So you see that the phase space vanishes at threshold. So this reaction is only possible if the if big M is larger than twice the small m. And then at the threshold of this reaction, the so there's no kinetic energy. So the particles are produced at rest, so their energy is equal to m. And the phase space grows as the square root near the threshold. Okay, so you. In principle, we need not, but so we just eliminated. The delta function, so we got rid of the delta function. So this delta function imposes the conservation laws. So in principle, this dimension of the phase space is equal to what? 3n minus 4. So this is the number of degrees of freedom that outgoing particles can have. And in the case of two particles, this is equal to 6 minus 4, which is 2. Yes?
Sorry, I managed to lose track of where some of the pies came from up there.
Let's see. Right, so the delta function always comes with a factor of 2 pi. When we eliminate the delta function, it's 2 pi cubed is divided out by pi cubed in the measure. So here we have 2 pi cubed in total in the denominator. And then there is one energy conservation delta function, so we should divide by 2 pi squared. And so in total, this gives 16 pi squared at the end. So yes, returning to your question, we have not yet integrated anything because we just use the conservation laws. So in principle, for the particle, for this particular case, when we consider the a decay of a particle, of course it's isotropic in all directions. So we can even eliminate this solid angle integration. The decay will be equal to the phase space multiplied by 4 pi. And then simply the matrix element of this matrix element divided by M. Yes?
Of course, big E is going to be equal to big M over 2, right? Because
big E will be equal to big M over 2, yes.
Yeah.
That's right. So this formula, okay, the reason I have written it that way, it applies also to the phase space of, say, particles produced in a collision. So you collide two particles, and then the other two fly away. And the formula for the phase volume will be the same. So let's make a break for 3.5 minutes, and then we'll continue.